All right, let's talk about building a case. I'm going to start with a traditional harm solvency case, and then depending on how much time I have left, I'll go into some other case formats as well. I think the harm solvency case gets bad rap sometimes because debaters think it isn't cool enough. I'll give you another piece of advice. Being cool never won anybody a debate round. Having a well-written case and being able to argue it well has won lots of people lots of debate rounds. Sometimes you have an introduction. In fact, almost always you'll have an introduction. It's a good idea to introduce yourself. Hi, I'm Sally Debater, and I'm here to affirm the resolution. Depends on what you want to put in there. Remember my story about bilingual education. Because I didn't have anything in the intro that said the specific topic of the case, I was about a minute and a half into the 1AC before those two guys figured out that our case wasn't what they thought it was. I denied them a minute and a half of prep time. So sometimes it can be cool, or let's say a different way, a little more effective, to not put in the introduction exactly what the subject of our case is going to be. Introduce it with general terms, like, good morning, our case today is about reducing ripoffs of the public treasury. Well, our case today is about improving the quality of American society by affirming this fine resolution. But I didn't specifically say what I'm going to do to improve society or stop ripoffs of the taxpayers or whatever. So it's something to think about. Definitions. Affirmative must establish the definitions. Don't let the negative do it. I guarantee you, if you leave key terms undefined, the negative team will get up there and define them for you, and your plan won't fit them. Not only do you need to define the key terms in the resolution, you don't have to define maybe every single word, but the key ones that are likely to be challenged. But you also need to define key terms that appear in your plan, even if those terms are not in the resolution. For example, if you're running an attrition case, you might want to define what an attrition policy is. If you're running the soft power plan, you might want to define what soft power is. If you're running 287G, you might want to define what 287G is. So the negative team doesn't come up there with some other freaky definition and say, well, this is really what it is, and they're not doing that, so therefore, they don't work. Typically, in most debate rounds that I've been in and I've seen, affirmative definitions have presumption if they're evidential, that is, they're supported by evidence. And here again, be careful. When you get up and assert a definition in the 1A, don't get up there and say, immigration is blah, blah, blah. Get up there and say, immigration is such and such from Merriam-Webster Dictionary 2007 or from some other dictionary 2007. Don't get up there and just assert your own definition of words. For the same reason, you can't get up and assert your own evidence. Definitions are evidence. You're not qualified to assert your own definitions. The negative teams will catch you on it. But if your definitions are reasonable and supported by evidence, then most of the time the judge will let you have those definitions. The negative team wants to challenge them. They're going to have to come up there with their definitions, and they're not only going to just say, well, our definition of policy is something else. Okay, but the affirmative team has the right to define the resolution. Why is your definition of policy better than the affirmative's? If you don't explain why it's better, more reasonable, why theirs was crazy, or just far out, or doesn't work, the affirmative is going to have presumption on their definitions. Their definitions are presumed to be valid unless the negative has a really good reason why they're not. Affirmative has the right to define the resolution. Now, if they're abusive, if they've got a definition from Susie's third grade art project on the internet, and then they've got some crazy plan that fits what Susie thought immigration was or whatever, well, maybe the negative can do something with that. If the definition's reasonable, the negative team probably shouldn't waste time fighting it. Go somewhere else. Let's talk about harms. Harms are problems in the status quo. What kind of bad things are happening today? Maybe there are social costs. Taxes are being spent on things that we shouldn't be spending them on. Taxpayers are being ripped off by these current problems. Maybe diseases are increasing. Maybe there's a higher risk of war. And I'm just generalizing to lots of different policy topics, not just this year's resolution, but increased risk of war, increased risk of disease. People are dying from something. Poverty's going up. Unemployment's going up. Civil rights are being denied. Could be lots of different harms, bad things that are happening to people. Understand the difference between a fact and a harm. Harm needs an impact. I need to be able to say, okay, why should I care about this? I'll give an example. Here's a harms, or what purports to be a harms card. See if it is. Dr. Valentine, UCLA, 2005. The United States imports oil from the Middle East at the astonishing rate of over $200,000 per minute. You know what my response to that is? So what? Okay, we import $200,000 a minute of oil. So what? Why is that a harm? That's a fact, but it's not a harm by itself. Why is it astonishing? I'm astonished it's not more. How much should it cost? Why is $200,000 a bad number? What's wrong with that number? Is it hurting anyone? I bet we import lots of paper clips and clothespins too. So what? Why should I care? Until you make me care, it's not a harm. So maybe we need another card to go with it. Dr. Wes Expert, Business Times, 2005. Imported oil from the Middle East is annually costing the U.S. 100,000 lost jobs and $50 billion in lost economic growth. Okay, now you got my attention. Jobs and economic growth are being harmed. Now we've got a harm. See the difference? Fact and a harm. You might need to read both cards to establish this. Maybe, maybe not. But you don't have a harm until you make me care. Let's talk about inherency. Your 1AC needs to answer some questions about the status quo. Is the status quo doing your plan? You better prove to me that the status quo isn't already doing what you're trying to do. If you're establishing some new, let's say you're going to have a subsidy for ethanol, solve imported oil, well, you better read me a card that says in the present system we're not subsidizing ethanol. How do I know you're changing anything? Remember, one of the key words in the resolution, policy resolutions always have somewhere in them a word that means change or reform, something that we're going to do differently or change. If you don't prove to me that we're changing something, you haven't done what the affirmative team has to do to win the round. It's the most basic thing there is. So you need a card that proves to me what's the difference between status quo and your plan. Prove to me the status quo is doing this, but our plan's doing that. Why can't the status quo do your plan? Why isn't the status quo doing something about these harms? What's the status quo doing differently? What laws, trends, or policies are different in the status quo from the policies that you want to do? Well, currently in status quo, there's this Plather v. Doe court decision that's forcing illegal immigrants to be allowed into public schools. We don't like that. That's bad because taxes go up, because this, this, and this. Therefore, Judge, we need to reverse Plather v. Doe. Okay, what's the inherency? It's a court decision. There's this ruling that's forcing the status quo to be what it is, but our plan's going to change it. You got to have that in your plan. The fact that harms are occurring is not the same thing as inherency. The question inherency has to answer is, why can't the status quo do the mandates of your plan or something similar that will solve just as well? Prove to me what the structure of the status quo is, or the attitudes of the status quo, that are blocking a solution to this problem right now. What are you changing? Not just what harms are occurring. The laws and policies that you plan to change are the inherency. Sometimes beginning debaters have trouble with that. Sometimes advanced debaters have trouble understanding that. I think I already talked about this one, but I'll give you some examples. Examples of inherency. For example, in the status quo, people aren't doing this thing because it's too expensive and they can't afford it. So our plan solves that by providing funding for this thing. Maybe in the status quo, Congress has a law. So our plan changes that law. Maybe there's a court decision that's forcing the status quo to be this way. Okay, we reverse that court decision. Maybe the current administration doesn't like it. So they're not going to do it, but we're going to force them to do it by changing it. Maybe people's attitudes are biased against it. They don't think it'll work, so they're not doing it. We're going to set up a mechanism where we do it anyway. That's inherency. You got to have that in your plan. Okay, let's go on to the plan. A plan is specific legislation or policy change that you want to implement. Everyone AC must have one. First part of a plan is the agency. Who passes or implements and or implements the plan? If you're changing a federal law, you need Congress to change it. Congress will enact the following legislation. That's your agency. If it's a court decision, you might need the Supreme Court to change it. If it's something that, if we didn't have a resolution that mentioned federal government, you just said United States should do something, maybe you could have the state legislatures change things. You can't do that this year. But in other years, maybe you could. If it's something being done by a federal agency, like the Department of the Interior, Justice Department, the Executive Office of Immigration Review, Department of Homeland Security, maybe they're the ones that need to change. And they're also going to be involved in implementing the plan. For example, Congress could pass the plan and say, okay, this is the new law, and Department of Homeland Security will administer this new law. They're the ones going to be making the arrests, carrying out these things, these new policies that Congress enacts. So you may need Congress plus something in the executive branch. Here's some examples of mandates. Mandates are the second part of an affirmative plan. You've got the agency that establishes and oversees them. You have mandates. And these are the new policies. This is the meat, the core of the affirmative plan. What is the new policy you're trying to enact? Airbags will be banned in all passenger cars in the U.S. and passive seat belts will be required. Boom, two mandates. That's an actual plan we wrote back when I was a student. Here's one. Supreme Court will reverse the Plyler v. Doe decision. Boom, there's our change. That's our mandate. Make it as simple as you can, or as Einstein said, everything should be made as simple as possible, but no simpler. Simple as you can, but as much information as is needed, and no less. Enforcement. What are you going to do if somebody violates the plan? For example, what if those illegal immigrants keep coming in even after you pass this new law? What are you going to do about it? Well, we're going to put them in jail for 10 years or 5 years or something. Okay, put that in your enforcement. What if it's a court decision? How do you enforce a court decision? Well, federal courts will enforce it by reversing any case that's not consistent with it. Or normal means of enforcing Supreme Court decisions. That's what they do. What if you're changing procedures done by government officials? You're not enacting something on the general public. You're just changing the procedures that government officials follow in the course of administering the policies. In that case, you might have something like any government official not in compliance who will be disciplined by normal administrative means. What if you pass a new free trade plan? All right? Who enforces, whose behavior changes under a free trade plan? Well, the customs officials, because they're the ones collecting the taxes. So in that case, you don't need $50,000 fine to 5 years imprisonment because you're not enforcing anything on the general public. All you need is normal administrative means for government employees. Because what if some customs agent keeps collecting the tax after you repealed it? What are you going to do to him? You're going to discipline him. You're going to tell him to cut it out or he's fired. Okay, that's normal administrative discipline for government employees. That's all you need for that situation. So it depends on who you're enforcing the plan on as to what kind of enforcement you need. Plan may need funding. Some plans don't. You're just reversing a court decision. That doesn't take any funding. Those judges are already getting paid whether they reverse decisions or not. They have to show up at work every day. So there's no additional funding needed to reverse a court decision. Some plans actually reduce federal spending. You're canceling some federal program that's been in effect. It's already funded. Boom, you're going to save $1 billion, whatever it is. So you don't need any additional funding. You just put in there, okay, this plan reduces federal spending. Doesn't need any additional funding. Some plans are self-funded. Maybe Mandate 1 is a gasoline tax. Then Mandate 2 is subsidies for solar energy or something. Okay, well, you funded it through your own mandates. That's fine. Some plans need significant amounts of funding, so you need to list what they are. I think we have a funding brief we're going to hand out later on. So it's a freebie we give you just for coming to camp. You can also download it for free on our website, too. So it's not just for coming to camp. But we'll hand that out later. It's a list of evidence that shows where you can get funding from. Different things in the federal budget that you could cut, for example, and say, we're gonna raise funding by cutting 50% of education grants and using that money for our plan. And we've got a piece of evidence that says that education grants are a waste of money anyway, and here's how much money you could save by cutting them. So there wouldn't be any problem for doing that. It's a great way to fund plans, I think. You can also get money from general federal revenues. That's all the tax money that Congress takes in through taxes. The entire federal budget is like $2.6 trillion or something like that. We're going to take some of that money and spend it. Funding should come from general federal revenues, elimination of crop subsidies, and a 1% tax on Star Wars products. You can put whatever you want to in there. It's a good idea to have some evidence for each of those things to show how much money they'll generate. Plans should have a timeline. When are you going to implement it? A lot of plans take effect immediately upon affirmative ballot. Some plans may take longer to put into effect. Maybe you've got to have new training procedures put in, or maybe you want to wait until something else happens first, so you make it 3 months or 6 months. Maybe you phase it in over 5 years because it's too big to do all at once. Okay, whatever. Just state that in your timing. Clarifying the plan. We used to call this legislative intent, but you can call it clarifying, whatever you want to call it. All affirmative speeches may clarify the plan, or we reserve the right to clarify the plan in future speeches. That means you can explain the plan. Doesn't mean you can add new planks to it. Doesn't mean you can change it. Doesn't mean you can amend the plan. It just means you can clarify the plan. For example, if the negative team gets up there in cross-examination and says, now, on your air pollution control plan, is your mandate there about motor vehicles, does that include riding lawnmowers or not? Well, your plan didn't specifically say yes or no, so you can clarify. You can say, yeah, that includes we include riding lawnmowers in those emissions controls. Okay, thank you. Now, guess what? If he's got some big disadvantage about riding lawnmowers, he's going to run it on you. You can't go back and say, oops, no, our plan doesn't cover riding lawnmowers. You clarified it. You're stuck with whatever you clarified it with. I've seen debaters get in trouble with clarifying plans like that. So be careful. Plan should explain solvency and or advantages. You can have one, you can have both, but you got to have something. Show me why this plan is better than the status quo. Show me what benefit we're getting by vote affirmative as the judge. Show me that you solve the problem, or show me that you gain advantages over the status quo. And the way to do that is to read evidence. Again, that goes back to finding experts who say this would be a good idea. Now, I'll grant you that there are some cases where the evidence is clear enough that X is causing this harm. And therefore, you may be able to show reasonably well by logic that if we cancel X, then the harm goes away. I'll buy into that sometimes as a judge. But I strongly recommend that you write cases where you have a piece of evidence that says, let's cancel X because that would be a really good policy and that would solve these harms, from Dr. Joe Expert, 2007. I recommend you write cases that way. Prove that you solve all the harms. If you raised harms, prove to me that you solve them. Don't raise harms you don't solve, for example.